Well, hello. This is Annabelle Crabb. I'm in a state of unseemly excitement because it's nearly time for the Sydney Writers' Festival. And of course, you'll remember last year's festival, which was unbelievably great, if largely hypothetical because of a certain virus. The excellent news is that the 2021 Sydney Writers' Festival is happening. And it's happening from the 26th of April until the 2nd of May. And I am very privileged to be in the company of Mr. Michael Williams, who will be artistically directing it.
Well, at that point, hopefully it artistically directs itself, but I've been artistically directing the bits up to the actual festival. And
you're ferociously underplaying the significance of your own role here, Michael. So a million questions about planning a festival. You know, as we kind of experience what we hope is the aftermath of COVID-19, what was the most important thing for you to put together this festival? What was your big number one priority?
It's funny hearing you describe that experience of last year and the putting it together and then the huge disappointment of not being able to go ahead. I feel like anyone in the business of planning stuff for the future, let alone a couple of months in the future, is constantly kind of superstitiously touching wood and hoping that everything will land properly.
Although you're looking suspiciously calm right now.
You know, I hide my panic behind a calm exterior. It's my best way to go. No, look, there were a few things. I mean, everyone within Sydney Writers Festival was grief-stricken not to put it on, but equally grief-stricken were our writers and artists and our audiences. And so we had a strong sense of what the responsibility of a festival is, who you're there for. And so what became clear to us was we wanted to do the most festival-y festival we could manage under the circumstances. You know, we're not foolhardy. We understood that it would be constrained in various ways. We would have to deliver it differently to the way it had been delivered in the past. But we kind of gave us a chance to go back to first principles, you know. So for me, one of those first founding ideas of a festival is the liveness of it, the being in a room with people.
So it's not going to be a Zoom thing?
No. Oh, and look, God, we weighed it up. I know. I've gotten to the point of Zoom fatigue, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, where the idea of some kind of hybrid, half on a screen, half in a theatre thing, just brought me out in hives. And so part of what I wanted to think about and part of what we as a team decided to focus on was, what does it mean to prioritize live? It might be live, it might be distance live, it might be a smaller capacity in the room, it might have to be configured differently, or the way we think about everything from audience questions to signing books might have to be fundamentally different to what we're used to. But let's start with the idea of how great it is to see two or more people sitting in a room talking to each other about something they're passionate about and being in the room with those people. And what does it mean to be able to say, okay, that's the kernel at the heart of a festival. Let's build outwards from there rather than compromise that.
Right. So what's the theme this year?
The theme this year is, in keeping with that very idea, it's within reach. And occasionally the skilled man who's advising us on our COVID strategies raises an eyebrow at the phrase within reach. And I'm not convinced the theme shouldn't be no touching rather than within reach. But we're conceding that it might be conceptual reach rather than physical reach.
Yeah, no touching has a sort of slightly prohibitive vibe.
I think vague prison undercurrents is exactly what you want when you're putting together a festival. Within reach for us for a few reasons. One of the constraints that I alluded to before, which in a way is obvious, is the need to focus on local authors this year. And that, to me, is a really exhilarating starting point. I've been lucky enough to be in some variation of this job for many years now. And actually, one of the things that can happen is scarcity makes people exciting. It makes them kind of rock stars in any program. So if you have a handful of international guests who audiences don't normally have access to, there's this natural impulse to say, well, they're the headliners, and then who else is there?
Mm.
And so if you remove that from the equation, it seems to me that's this really exciting, wonderful, vibrant thing. Actually, the truth of it is Sydney Writers Festival audiences adore local writers. When you look at the patterns of ticket buying and sales in previous years, it's the locals that are the real rock stars of the piece,
yeah,
again and again. But this gives us a chance to conceptually make it about them, make it about local voices. And so Within Reach is also a celebration of the kind of talent that is within reach in these times when other people are further away.
Because normally, I mean, writers' festivals tend to be about bring out your latest, don't they? You know, well, what have you got? What have you just published? And so does that mean that this year we can actually hear from writers that haven't published a book in the last year but who everybody just loves to see?
Yeah, that seemed really important to me. I mean, again, it seemed potentially a constraint but also an opportunity. This is how Pollyanna-ish I am. Everything is glass half full. But no, I think one of the things that I certainly experienced in lockdown, and I feel like other people would have experienced across 2020, is the ubiquity of a certain kind of digital media. Mm. You know, you can see a certain kind of interview or hear a certain kind of interview again and again. And if it's a writer you love, whether that interview happened for the New York Public Library or for Edinburgh Book Festival or for Glee Books, kind of doesn't matter. It's more or less a variation on the same thing everywhere. And part of what that does is flatten out those conversations and those talks to make them seem much more acutely just a step in the publicity tour.
Right.
That to me has its limitations. Actually, the reason we love a festival isn't to see people sit on a stage and shill the latest product and drive you to the bookshop at the end. That's part of it.
The novella.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, the angst of mothers in short fiction, whatever the topic is. It is that bit, though, where you go a bit more esoteric.
I would totally go to see that.
So would I. I think I have more than once. But it's, you know, it is those kind of more abstract conversations. Mm. And so when we started putting this program together, one of the things we did was got on the email and got on the phone to Australian writers at all different stages of their career and said, look, I know you normally wouldn't come out unless you had to because your publisher had said this is the time you do it and then you're allowed to hide.
Put some pants
in your garret for 10 months. Exactly. It's time. Stop lounging around. But also to say to them genuinely, what's exciting you? What's interesting
That's
you?
Really
what are you going away to work on? What are the kind of concepts that you've always wanted a chance to tease out with other like-minded people?
And also, what sort of thoughts have you been having in this strange year that we've all had of thinking about all sorts of big things that we're normally trying to avoid. So did you, I mean, so you've actually had some luck sort of tickling out some of the more reticent or, you know, like I'm thinking of you like tickling trout or
Look,
getting people to come out.
Being mindful that, you know, some of the trout in question may now be listening to this and not thrilled with the imagery of me tickling their stomachs.
You're very welcome, Michael.
Thank you. I'm loath to give concrete examples because I feel like the segue is too direct.
But yes. All right. So let me take you then to actually telling us some names. I know a little bit about the opening night that you have planned, and I must say I find it highly exciting. So why don't you, with the absolute assurance that none of these writers is personally a trout in my eyes or yours.
No.
Go.
Not a fish to be seen. Opening night, we have three writers, and I'm particularly excited about the lineup we've put together for this. We have two Miles Franklin winners and one of the most exciting debut books of the year. Melissa Lukashenko will kick the running order off. She'll be followed via video link up from her home in France by Tara June Winch.
Oh, great.
And then we will finish up with Evelyn Araloon, whose debut book, Drop Bear, is out now from UQP. And the three of them are three extraordinary writers. They'll be talking broadly on the festival theme of Within Reach. But thinking about what it is that put being able to identify as a writer within reach, you know, the ways in which, you know, at times it's impossible to conceive of yourself as an artist or a writer in this country. Financially speaking, our kind of anxiety about big noting ourselves, all these things work against someone saying, no, I'm a writer. And these three are three of the finest writers we've got. Each of them talks so eloquently about the writers who have come before and made it possible for them to do the work that they do, and also to think about the ways in which they want to kind of change and challenge the traditions that have come before.
Well, they are also quite a nice generational progression, aren't they, those three?
Yeah, there's about a decade between each of them, and so we're going in descending order of age, partly because for each of them, they are very explicit about acknowledging the debt they feel they have to the writers who have come before them. And so that feels like, in a kind of microcosm, emblematic of what we want to do with the local focus in the festival this year. That idea that whether you're an established writer who's been doing it for decades or whether you're someone who's just brought your first book out, you're part of a kind of mutually dependent ecosystem where if any part of that system is struggling, it actually makes it harder for everyone else.
Yeah. What's your, just quickly before we go back to the program, I mean, how's the Australian publishing industry been doing in the last year?
On 2020 alone, it was a really interesting year. Actually, bookshops reported a better than normal year. They had a little bit of a spike. And some publishers correspondingly had a pretty good year of it. Mm. What that overwhelmingly reflected, though, was people going for known quantities and established names. Mm. For people who, because I mean, I come to this job from having been in Melbourne all last year.
At the Wheeler Centre,
And not being able to browse in bookshops, for example, completely changes the kind of bookshopping you do. You go looking for the thing that you already know you want.
Yeah.
You don't. The discovery element isn't there. And so there's this, you know, we have, publishing in this country is incredibly rich in terms of the combination of, not rich in monetary terms, in terms of the combination of big houses and kind of local arms of multinationals on the one hand, and little independents that are kind of have far more kind of, far more locally selected lists. Mm. And that diversity of publishing is really healthy and good. But a year like last year kind of slightly distorts who does well, whose career is viable.
So does that mean that there's a fleet of sad writers around who have, you know, pushed out books into the stream and actually had no way of really publicising them or talking about them like they do at writers' festivals?
Potentially. And that was something we were acutely aware of putting together this year's programme. And in fact, it led to one of these slightly more irregular and outlandish programming decisions that we've made going into this year, which is at the very end of the festival, following the closing night address that I'll talk about in a sec, but at the very end of the festival, we're holding a debutante ball for those writers who are the COVID class of 2020.
Oh.
Because we recognise if you don't get a book launch, if you don't get bookshop events or a book tour or invited to writers' festivals, there is a danger that you miss that discovery piece, you miss that moment. And as I said before, it is so perilously hard to make a living as a writer in this country that all it takes is one thing to push you off kilter and, you know, your book fails to find the audience it so richly deserves, and then by the time it comes around to kind of pitching the second book, you're an author with a slightly dicey track record. It becomes this kind of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
So we said, what do you do in old-fashioned society when you want to introduce people to the world? You give them a debutante ball. So we're holding a grand party on the final night of the festival. We've invited all the writers around the country who brought out a debut work of adult fiction or memoir last year. They're the two genres that are particularly hit at this period. There's, you know, about 100 of them from around the country, and they're going to descend on Carriage Works, and we're going to welcome them. And it'll be a celebration for readers. It's a huge opportunity for you to discover those writers you might have missed.
And potentially marry one of them.
And, well, let's face it, if at least one of them isn't wearing a sky blue tuxedo and a cummerbund or something in taffeta, then I'm going to be really cross.
Why is it that I feel that you'll be able to rely on that outcome? All right. Well, now, before we talk about the closing night, which would seem premature given that we haven't really talked about the schedule at all. But so is what you're doing with the program finding interesting matchups between, you know, people that we know but haven't necessarily seen talk to each other before?
Look, that's a big part of it, is that combinations are always important in any program that you put together. It's funny, this played out as a conversation. This is a little bit kind of obscure and inside baseball, if you like, but with our head of marketing and our marketing team, when it came time to putting together the print program, and they said, house style, we don't use ampersands in titles of sessions. And myself and my colleagues in the programming team said, I think this year we do.
Might need to.
I think this year we need to weaponize this bit of punctuation, because it's the combinations that are actually defining so much of this program.
Yeah.
It's the ways in which you can have people with sometimes surprising, sometimes kind of you see the combination and you go, oh no, I've always wanted to see those two together. But it's the pairings that matter more than making any one person the star of the program. It's about the kind of extraordinary conversations that you get to have access to.
It's almost like one of those sort of fantasy dinner parties, basically. Your process of planning this festival is
more or less
like
that's all an artistic director job is it's the what's the dream dinner party, who are the people you seat together, how do you make it work.
And I must say I actually squealed, I think, aloud when I saw that you've programmed Helen Garner to talk with Sarah Krasnostein. I mean, that's genius.
Look, Sarah's debut book, The Trauma Cleaner, was an absolute sensation.
Yep.
Her second book, The Believer, I think is even better. But, you know, way back late last year, it was clear to me that, you know, you want someone talking to an author about an important new work of nonfiction that is formally brave and experimental and bold and exciting. You want Helen. And it's nice when you're programming to feel that kind of thrill of excitement. It's doubly nice when your guests are as excited. Helen is a massive fan of Sarah's work and was desperate to do it. Sarah couldn't believe that Helen was doing it. Everyone's happy, and that's going to be a great event. But in an example of the kind of passing on of one thing to another, Sarah herself will be an interviewer for us in another session at the festival, and she'll interview Peter Carey about his body of work and his career. And so that writer at different points of their career are able to kind of think about the continuum into which they're writing.
Great. Can you give me another couple of headliner matchups?
I can. Some of them are more in the kind of journalistic vein. So Stan Grant's new book is coming out. There's a lot of buzz around that, and Kerry O'Brien's going to interview Stan about that. But then in another session, Stan's going to interview...
Who shall interview whom?
Well, that's the thing. It's a discursive interview.
Where's your money, though?
Both ways. Well, I don't know. I'm hoping for... sparks when too many questions are asked by the questionee. But then Stan, in another session, will interview Tom Keneally, whose work he's admired for his entire career. And so you get that kind of combination in both directions. The wonderful Jan Fran is going to interview Judith Lucy about her new memoir, Turns Out I'm Fine,
which
will be a great combination. Those two big fans of each other's, so that will make for a great conversation. We have combinations like James Bradley is interviewing Kim Stanley Robinson, the celebrated science fiction writer, both admirers of each other's work from afar. Kim will be joining us via video link up from his home in California. And that points as well, I guess, to the way in which we are using the occasional remote guest for the program. The subject, the focus, the passion of it is resolutely local, but we don't believe that local conversations happen in a vacuum. And so it's not representative to say that we just put the bubble up and don't acknowledge that we're engaging with other things that are happening elsewhere. It's really important to us that we use technology to bring, if I can do a title drop of the festival theme, to bring within reach the guests that we couldn't otherwise get. And so we try to do that judiciously. It's where it's someone who can add to a conversation from outside that is going to kind of enhance it.
Now, I know that we're not all about the international big names, but my eye was also slightly drawn to one pair up at Angel Place that you've got coming up.
Yes, it's a double bill of events. And again, when we were looking at it, we were kind of we weren't looking to reproduce the old model of festival, but we also recognised that there were some guests who were unlikely to make the trip here in a normal year to have the opportunity to talk to Australian audiences. And on those cases, maybe it was worth us making an exception. If we could stage it properly, if we could make it an intimate conversation and not have you feel like you may as well be watching it on YouTube at home, then we were confident that it was worth delivering. And so we've really saved that for a couple that we think are ones out of the box. The first at Angel Place at 6 p.m. On the Thursday night is Kazuo Ishiguro. He hasn't been to Australia since Remains of the Day. Since then, he's won a Nobel Prize for Literature. He's written extraordinary body of work. And his new book, Clara and the Sun, is astonishing. And he's just one of the great people writing in English today. So we're thrilled to have him in the lineup. And then at 8:30 at Angel Place, we have the extraordinary Rachel Cusk. I know. Cusk is one of those ones that, as a literary programmer, I think I've probably invited for the past, I can't even tell you how many years. And
I think there's just a stamp, isn't there, with her name on it, that you just go, dear, there is please.
Unfortunately, she has a stamp with the word regretfully no on it. So we both wield our stamps at 20 paces.
And she backed down.
But this time, thanks to the wonder of technology, we're finally able to introduce her to Sydney audiences who don't know her and deliver her to her sizable legion of fans. If you haven't read her, in particular, her Outline trilogy, the first book of which is called Outline, is you're a fan, aren't you?
Yeah. So, kudos, Transit.
Yeah, she's just the other amazing thing about her
is terrifying. I don't ever want to sit next to her on a plane, but I would be very happy to read her books.
I would read how she described you after sitting next to her on a plane. Definitely, I think I'm here for that. She's amazing because she's been writing for kind of decades. and you read her stuff from early in her career.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful and it's very skilled. And she was shortlisted, I think, for an Orange Prize at one point for one of them, the name of which escapes me at the moment. But they were quite conventional novels. Yeah. And then at some point in her career, something clicked in her head and she tried something very different in the trilogy that we've mentioned. And it's astonishing.
It's like her style, her literary style, went to boot camp and just developed a six pack, and it's so muscular and structural but funny at the same time. Oh,
it's true.
Gosh.
If I saw her literary style in the park walking past, I would feel physically intimidated.
We must forward these remarks to her. Sure, she'd enjoy it.
The other international who I should make brief mention of while we're in the voices coming in from elsewhere is one who is in her late 80s, would not be able to make the trip to Australia again. She runs a bookshop in the Florida Keys, but that is Judy Blume.
Wow!
And it, you know... It's a real litmus test of your age, whether you're excited by Judy Blume or not. And it, you know, I went into the office and excitedly said, "Oh my God, Judy Blume said yes." And the crickets in the office, I was like, "No, you're too young, you're too old. This is
Whereas I am stoked.
Thank you. A sweet spot. I am stoked. I know that there'll be a lot of people listening to this who are stoked. She was such
a formative writer.
I'm
reading Super Fudge to my 8-year old right now.
I'm reading it to my my 7 and 9 year olds, and it really stands up.
Yep.
We're also calling that session "Are You There, Sydney? It's Me, Judy."
Oh,
so
that's perfect. It's a perfectly grasped opportunity.
I got to be honest; that's the only reason we invited her. I don't care about the session; we just got to name it, so that's all that matters.
Well, let's hope she can't work podcasts.
I hope she can't.
No, your fandom in this studio where we're recording this, Judy, is absolutely without peer.
Actually, part of what she represents, which comes back a bit to the festival theme and to what we're doing with local authors, is that thing about writers as readers of cross generations of writers, the ways in which there are certain voices who we're introduced to when we're young that can kind of shape our reading taste for years afterwards. So we have on one night at Sydney Town Hall the traditional kind of storytelling gala where a dozen or so writers reflect on, have their own kind of personal reflection on the festival theme. And that's always a highlight. But this year, putting it together, we were kind of, I could pinch myself with the writers who came back and enthusiastically and generously said yes. And the reason I thought of this after talking about Judy Blume is one of those writers is Alison Lester.
Oh,
you know, and so you have literally decades of Australian readers who cut their teeth on Alison's work, who are now introducing her to their kids. I think it's 40 years since Magic Beach this year.
Wow. Oh, God.
Which is frightening. Mm. Yeah. But that kind of voice in the mix is so exciting to me. The rest of the lineup for that storytelling gala includes, but is not limited to, Tony Birch, Trent Dalton, Richard Flanagan, Alison Lester, Nakia Louie, Christos Tsolkas, Maria Chamarkin. We have Geraldine Brooks joining the lineup via video link up from her home in the US. And so just as Tara June Winch is in our opening or Peter Carey's in our Carriage Works program, Geraldine's in our gala, the commitment to Australian voices is from everywhere.
Isn't that nice? I mean, because, you know, part of the story of last year and still, it must be said, this year is this sort of ghostly assortment of Australians that are still far from here but are, you know, constrained in their ability to come home or to visit. So it's kind of nice to keep in touch with those far-flung ones.
I'm also fascinated in it from a kind of writerly perspective, is writers who write about country and how important or not important physical proximity is. Mm. You know, if you're a writer like Carey, who is so indelibly Australian but hasn't lived here for many years, how does that shape the way your own idea of your national and literary identity exists? Mm. One of our festival curators this year is the wonderful crime writer Michael Robotham.
Yep.
Huge success in his career. His books are never set in Australia. They're always set in the UK, you know, and he's Australian-based, and that's just, he writes into a tradition where physical country isn't an important part of what he does.
Mm.
Our other guest curator is Nayuka Gori, who's an amazing young writer, and they're doing a whole lot of work in their sessions looking at the nature of people who write about country and what their relationship with country is, what it is to bear witness to country, and then to find a way to translate that onto the page. And I think that set of ideas is really interesting to me.
Now, one of the other things that you're doing, I note from the program, is this sort of spectacular poetry night. Now, I can't wait for this.
Look, it's we're very excited by this too, and it partly comes back to that very first part of the conversation that we had where we talked about the importance of live and the importance of live performance. And one of the great delights that you're experiencing with your kids, I experience with mine, is how nice it is to read to someone or to be read to and to be read to well. And one of
and
the things...
And in a voice that you recognise.
A voice that you recognise, someone who actually knows how to deliver something. And so we decided that putting the writing at the heart of it and the kind of beautiful words at the heart of it, we would ask some of Australia's finest performers, the finest actors, to get on the stage and recite a poem on themes of distance and closeness. And so that's going to be a second gala event at the Town Hall, and it's the lineup for that, again, I mean, just to rattle off a few of the names, there'll be 15, 16 of them in the end, but Brian Brown, Justine Clark, Tim Minchin, Pamela Rabe, Yael Stone, it's a crazy good lineup, and each of them will have a poem on distance and closeness.
And do they choose the poem or do you choose the
poem? A mix. So we've certainly started putting together our own little compendium of them, sharing them around the office and having a quiet weep on a Thursday afternoon. It's great. It's magic. The aim is to either upset someone or make them laugh.
Poetry jukebox. I can't wait. It's a very, very cool idea.
Yeah, no, we're really excited. Again, one of the opportunities afforded to us by this different way of approaching the program was, and back to that question of the combination of people, is it became less about, you know, who's the blockbuster who sells out this venue on their own, and more about how do we combine people in ways that are interesting and surprising and funny. So in the same spirit, we're doing a debate at the Town Hall on the Saturday night, and I would encourage you, if I say any date or time in this podcast episode, to check the website to see if I'm actually
right. Because
you're
an idiot.
There's a reasonable chance that I'm just saying a random day. My brain is mush at this point.
Dates not within reach.
Yeah. No, memory not within reach. The debate is on the topic, how good is Australia? And it'll be a lot of fun. You've very kindly agreed to take part in that debate.
Well,
I inform you now on this podcast.
Yeah, I know. Well, I agreed to do it before you told me who the opposition was in the debate. Oh, my God.
We're having a lot of fun. The some of the names I can announce at this point are Elaine Crombie, who you might know from Black Comedy, Don Watson, who'll be arguing for the fundamental good enoughness of Australia.
And Elaine Crombie has played Nakia Louie's vagina. That's about, you know, I mean, she can do anything.
Well done for enunciating every word in that sentence carefully just so that it was as clear as possible and also obscure. And also David Marr will be in the lineup for that one.
He's really not much account.
No, I've heard that. I've never seen him do anything because he's so famously reclusive.
And so what's happening, I mean, it's the festival itself, it must be repeated, is happening live and in person, so at Carriage Works, and you've got some of the regular favourite kind of daily events going on, right?
Yep, kicking off with headline and papers in the traditional way and then through to evening programming at Carriage Works. It's the traditional mix of free events and charged events.
Plus new extra Barry Cassidy on a daily basis.
You know, I've been missing Barry on my TV screens regularly, and we felt confident that festival goers were big fans of Barry as well. And so he's very kindly agreed to do a kind of 10 a.m. session on each of the 4 days of the festival, from Thursday the 29th of April to Sunday the 2nd of May. And he's doing each one on a kind of different topic with a spotlight interview and then a panel discussing that afterwards. And that ranges from China to an interview with Evan Osnos from The New Yorker, who's written a biography of Joe Biden, to political biographies at home, to Scott Ludlam's new memoir. It's a terrific lineup with Barry, and it's very nice to have him back at the festival.
And look, just because I have a 14-year-old, I need to ask you about the young adult fiction wing, because that is always a section of the festival that punches well above its weight with the star power that it attracts.
It does. We have we have one of the best YA kids and family programs that I've seen anywhere, and it's so exciting. Part of the way it's exciting is the ways in which it utilizes kind of all the spaces across Carriage Works. Mm. And on those days where it's going on, you feel the whole place kind of come to life as the well-orchestrated mayhem of younger readers meets the not-at-all-orchestrated mayhem of elderly readers, and they collide in the bookshop. Sunday is, as ever, family day. There's all-day YA in there. The lineup of Australian stars in that space is really exciting, including people like Jessica Townsend, whose Nevermore series is an absolute sensation.
Also, mm-hmm.
It's so good. There's a lot of fun to be had in that program.
Awesome. So do you want to tell me about you've been putting off telling me about the closing.
Oh, no, just
night.
Cagey.
Have I missed anything? Or, have you missed anything? Well, crucially,
we've missed yes, a thousand but that's things. The point. This yeah. is a taster. It's a teaser. We can't give them the whole festival right now. But look, there is heaps in there. We're really proud of what we've put together. It's an extraordinary range of voices from across all different parts of kind of the world of Australian letters. The most I can say is it might not be an exhaustive list of everyone writing in Australia right now, but it feels like a pretty comprehensive one. And that's exciting to us. And so for closing night, we wanted someone who was a really established voice, someone who could take a long view of the ways in which Australian literature has changed over the years. My head of marketing has tried to discourage me from mentioning Geoffrey Blainey and the Tyranny of Distance every time I talk about the festival theme. But distance in Australia, it seems to me to be such a kind of potent idea, and one that defines our idea of cultural worth in a way that has been, I think, at times very corrosive and certainly kind of shifts and wanes. And so having had a year where we're all being forced to keep our distance and where distance became a kind of more acutely defined thing, I think has an interesting effect on how we understand the value of what we're doing. And it seems to me the great privilege of being artistic director of something like Sydney Writers Festival is that you can celebrate the fact that the conversations that are happening here are as vital, as important, as urgent, as erudite as the conversations that are happening anywhere. And so we wanted someone who'd kind of thought about some of these ideas across their career, and there was no one really to measure up to the incomparable David Malouf, who delivers our closing night address. Any fan of Malouf's body of work knows how pungently he writes about the connection between things, the intimate and the ways in which there is space between concepts, between everyday experiences. And so I am very excited to hear what David Malouf makes of the idea of Within Reach. I think it's going to be a pretty memorable way to bring the festival home. And then when he's done, we can all go and be idiots at a debutante ball. So what else is there?
Look, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, on one level, a challenge to plan a writers' festival in this age of restricted travel, but in another way, I mean, it's part of the paradox that was 2020, right? Like just looking around our own homes, around our own spaces, and finding the incredible things that existed in those spaces, and it seems like the approach to this festival has kind of grown into exactly that same thing, right? Finding the precious things that are all around you and having an opportunity to let them breathe and let them talk about the things that they want to talk about. Right?
I think that's exactly right. Mm. That's certainly how it feels to me. I mean, there's an extent to which the nature of modern life is this kind of relentless treadmill where you're moving forward and I'm too busy, and then I'm going to get that break for holidays for this little pocket of time, and I can't take the time to assess whether I'm making good choices or I'm doing things the way that I want to be doing them or whatever. We just barrel forward. And 2020, for all its horrors and losses and grief and challenges that it posed to people, and I'm not downplaying any of those things, but it was that rarest thing in modern life, which was a moment when we had to pause, where we had to stop and reassess and work out how we might do things differently. As little as, the relationship between casual and permanent workers and their employers, or working from home and workplace flexibility, or hotel buffets. We're probably not getting them back anytime. These little things are part of the kind of
minutiae. It's probably leading tragedy of 2020.
I went third buffet. There, but you know, it was high in my mind. But you know, the kind of minutiae and the kind of granular detail of the way we work our jobs, we live our lives, we run our cultural organisations and events. The treadmill means it goes unscrutinised most of the time. And if nothing else, 2020 gives us a chance to stop and say, who are we for? How do we do justice to that idea? And what does it mean? And that's felt pretty exciting.
Well, I must say, it's a cracking looking programme and I'm already madly circling things. So congratulations for pulling it together under difficult circumstances. And where are my manners? Welcome to Sydney as well is the other thing that I wanted to say. I mean, you're very well known throughout Australia for your work in the literary sphere, but it's wonderful to have you in the sparkling city where it's not raining.
I understand that there is a city somewhere outside the office and I intend to discover it at some point soon.
Maybe
nice
on
here.
The 3rd of May.
Reasonable chance.
Those festival dates again, Michael? Quick.
The festival runs from the 26th of April to the 2nd of May. And you'll be able to catch the insert if you didn't already. It was in the Sydney Morning Herald on the morning of the 13th of March.
Outstanding date control.
Oh, look at that. Like I know what I'm doing.
I'll see you at the festival.
Can't wait.